gentleman in the elevator now is a candid star. These folks who are entering, the man with the white shirt, the lady with the trench coat, and subsequently one other member of our staff, will face the rear. And you'll see how this man in the trench coat tries to maintain his individuality, but little by little, he looks at his watch, but he's really making an excuse for turning just a little bit more to the wall. Now we'll try it once again. Here's the candid subject. Here comes the candid camera staff, three of them at least. And this man has apparently been in groups before. Here's a fella with his hat on in the elevator. First he makes a full turn to the rear and Charlie closes the door. A moment later, we'll open the door, everybody's changed positions. Now we'll see if we can use... see if we can use group pressure for some good. Now, in a moment, on Charlie's signal, everybody turns forward. Notice, they take off their hats. And now, do you think we could reverse the procedure? Watch.
I sort of get the feeling that they could do a lot to that guy all day long if they really, really wanted to. I love that video because I don't know if we ever like stop to think about how easy it is for us to be influenced by the people around us, right? You get in an elevator and there's some social norms that all of a sudden, as long as everybody else is doing it, we're going to go along with them, right? I used to have a mentor in my life who used to say things to me like, you know, I can tell you who you're going to become in 5 years, and it's not that hard. And I would say, well, how do you do that? I just have to look at the people who are around you, right? I just have to look at the people who are around you because the people around us carry so much influence in our lives, not just on our actions in an elevator, but also in the way we speak and in the way we think and in the way we feel, right? And he would say to me, I could just look at the people who are speaking into your life, and I know how you're going to get shaped. I know how you are going to become, how you're going to grow. And so in this sermon series that we're titled In the Desert, last week we began our journey here, and we're talking about some of the toughest times in our lives and who we become and how we answer some core questions about who we are and who God is when we're walking through the middle of these really, really difficult times. And in fact, we looked at this verse from Deuteronomy 6, where God says, in the future, when a child asks you, what is the meaning of the stipulations, decrees, and the laws the Lord our God has commanded you, right? When God lays out a pathway and a plan for how to be his people, what does that mean? When your kid asks, what do you tell them? God says, tell them this. Tell them we were slaves of Pharaoh in Egypt, but the Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand. So God has this moment that he keeps referring back to again and again and again. It says, when people wonder about who you are, when people wonder about who God is, tell them about the desert. Tell them about this really difficult time as slaves in Egypt and 40 years in the desert. Tell them that. There's something so powerful about that that God keeps bringing it up. He keeps bringing it up and says, this is the one that's going to tell you how to answer that question. And last week we talked about when we find ourselves in the middle of the desert, how do we quiet that inner voice, that inner critic that tells us things like we're not good enough, we don't belong, God doesn't love us. Like, what do we do with that inner voice? We talked about that last week. This week, I want to talk about some of the outer voices, some of the external voices that show up in our lives again and again and again. I want to talk about what do we do with those voices? Because we know that those voices can shape us. We know that they can direct our actions, even just getting in an elevator, right? And we all have someone that we are allowing to shape our lives. For some of us, it's just that inner voice, it's us. For others of us, there's external voices that we're listening to. But the question is, who are we going to listen to? When we find ourselves in the middle of the desert, how do we deal with some of these voices, these external voices? So today we're going to start off with where we left with Moses last week. Last week when we were with Moses, we found out that he was this shepherd out in the middle of the desert, out in the middle of the wilderness, and that he brings his flocks to the opposite end of the wilderness, and he encounters a burning bush, and he has this whole encounter with God, right? And so that's where we left him there. And today I want to skip forward a little bit. I want to skip past the 10 plagues. I want to skip past leaving Egypt in the Exodus. I want to skip past the parting of the Red Sea. Because when we first met Moses, he was a shepherd leading his flock through the wilderness. And what we find out is that he's still doing that a number of chapters later. He's leading his flock through the wilderness. So here's a couple of scriptures that tell us where Moses is in Exodus. And the first one in Exodus 15 says, "Then Moses led Israel from the Red Sea, and they went into the desert of Shur." So that's chapter 15. Chapter 16, "The whole Israelite community set out from Elim and came to the desert of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they'd come out of Egypt." So that's 15 and 16. And now in chapter 17, "The whole Israelite community set out from the desert of Sin, traveling from place to place as the Lord commanded." So you've got this story after the Red Sea. Moses leads them through the desert of Shur and then into Elim and then into the desert of Sin. We met this guy as a shepherd leading his flock through the wilderness, and he's doing it again. Right? It's almost as if this is the primary role he plays in his life. And he's shepherding this community of Israel through the wilderness, through the desert, for 40 years. And it's not really that unusual, because one of the most dominant pictures God gives us of himself and of us is this relationship between shepherd and sheep, right? He uses that all the time. It comes up all the time. In Psalm 95, he says, David writes, "For he is our God, and we are the people of his pasture, the flock under his care." It's that same image, sheep, shepherd, through the wilderness, right? So here's what I want to notice about this, because when David writes that, "We are the people of his pasture, the flock under his care," it sounds very poetic, right? It sounds like something you might sew on a pillow and throw it on your couch, right? It sounds very, this is this rich imagery that draws us in. But I think it tells us something a lot more about who we are. It tells us that we are sheep. Right? So there's something worth knowing about being sheep. If that's the image choice, the word choice that God uses to paint a picture of who we are, let's find out what it means to be a sheep. So a little bit about sheep and shepherds. Today, being a shepherd today out in the Middle East is usually a job that's done by children. It's usually a job that's done by 10-year-olds. So I got a great picture here of a 10 or 11-year-old boy. This is out in Israel. And this is a very common role for people to play when they live out in sort of this wilderness place. It's one of the only things you can do as a profession is raise flocks. And even in Moses' day, it was normal for children to be the under-shepherds while the father ran sort of the whole industry of shepherding for his family. So shepherd's job is to help sheep. It's to help them find food. And so they travel far and wide to try to find enough food to raise their flocks on, to lead the sheep and keep them safe. And in the desert, there's almost just enough food, so you got to spend a lot of time helping them find out where they're going to eat. And sheep are not independent animals, right? Sheep are followers. Sheep are not very bright most of the time. They'll follow whatever is put in front of them. So one of the main roles a shepherd has is to keep them from wandering off. So that's a big difference between sheep and goats. In the Bible, sometimes you hear Jesus talk about sheep and goats. Goats are independent. They're going to do their own thing. Goat's going to goat all day long, and he's going to go off in this direction and do whatever he wants. And if the sheep aren't careful, they're following that goat. So the shepherd tries to keep the sheep going in the right direction. They do that through a number of ways. They often will throw rocks sort of off to the side of where they don't want their sheep to go. because they're going to hear a sound of a rock hitting a rock, and it'll frighten them, and they'll kind of move in the other direction. And they'll throw a rock over here, and you just kind of keep them going where you need to. Right? The shepherd will call out to his sheep and often sing over his sheep because they follow his voice. So where he wants them to go, he'll stand, and they'll come, and they'll follow him. They'll use sort of their rod to grab a sheep when he's fallen in a ravine or gotten into trouble, and they'll use the staff to fight off animals or predators that might be attacking sheep. So you have this really interesting relationship where the sheep need the shepherd to survive. But sheep are followers. There's the reason they need a shepherd is because they will follow, because they will go off in their own direction. They have a tendency to wander into danger. And that's the image, right? That's the picture God uses to talk about you and me. So if we are sheep, then it's probably more than just some poetic language, some great imagery, right? If we are sheep, it means we are probably prone to wander in our own directions, right? We are prone to wander and follow things that lead us into danger. We're prone to go off on our own and instead of get the nourishment and food where the shepherd's leading us. And if we're sheep, then when we find ourselves in the middle of deserts, when we find ourselves in places that make us feel raw and confused and open and exposed, then there is a real danger for us because we are sheep and we like to follow. Moses himself is faced with this exact situation. More than just imagery, like real life, literally, he's out in the middle of the wilderness with these people. So let's look at what happens. Let's look at what happens in chapter 15, 16, and 17. Because in chapter 15, it starts with this. It says, "Then Moses led Israel from the Red Sea, and they went out to the desert of Shur. From there, for 3 days, they traveled in the desert without finding water. When they came back to Marah, they could not drink its water because it was so bitter." That's why they call the place Marah. So then the people grumbled against Moses, saying, "What are we to drink?" Okay, now a chapter later, chapter 16. "The whole Israelite community set out from Elim and came to the desert of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after they had come out of Egypt. In the desert, the whole community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The Israelites said to them, 'If we had only died by the Lord's hand in Egypt, if God would have just killed us in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted, but you have brought us out into this desert to starve this entire assembly to death.'" Okay, so things are getting a little rough in 15. Things are getting a little rough in 16. Chapter 17, not much better. Chapter 17, "The whole Israelite community set out from the desert of Sin, traveling from place to place as the Lord commanded. They camped at Rephidim, but there was no water for the people to drink. So they quarreled with Moses and said, 'Give us water to drink.' Moses replied, 'Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you put the Lord to the test?' But the people were thirsty for water there, and they grumbled against Moses. They said, 'Why did you bring us up out of Egypt to make us and our children and our livestock die of thirst?' Then Moses cried out to the Lord, 'What am I to do with these people? They are almost ready to stone me.'" I mean, that's some rough going for Moses. But here he is, right? Moses has a choice because he's in the middle of the desert, and God has called him. God has called him to lead this nation of people, to drive them through the desert and to find a promised land. He has promised this to Moses. He's got a person that Moses is to become, and God is leading him through that, but he's got all these other voices that are like, "Moses, this seems like a really terrible plan. Moses, we're all going to die out here. Don't you care? Moses, it would be better if we were still back slaves in Egypt where we actually had food to eat." So God is speaking to Moses and drawing him in one direction, but people are speaking in as well, and they have different things to say to him. And in the deserts in our life, if these are the places that shape us so significantly, if it's these desert places that really shape and form the person that we are to become, the most important question we can ask is, what voice is influencing us the most when we find ourselves in the desert? Because if we are like sheep, then We all have someone that's shaping us. Might be an inner voice. It's probably a lot of external voices. And not only are we in danger of listening, right, to these other voices, because most of our time, I think, is altogether spent listening to too many other voices in our lives, there's actually a really extremely dangerous thing to do when we practice that, right? Proverbs talks about it like this. In Proverbs 13, it says, "Walk with the wise and become wise, for a companion of fools suffers harm." That's Proverbs 13. And Proverbs 27 says, "As iron sharpens iron, to one person sharpens another." And then again in Proverbs 12, "The righteous choose their friends carefully, but the way of the wicked leads them astray." So now, Proverbs are not just like wise sayings because they seem to make a lot of sense. They are observations, right? They are observations about how the world works. So we read this kind of stuff in Proverbs. We learn the wisdom that Solomon wrote there, and we realize that the Bible's pretty serious about those external voices in our life. And the observation is that those shape us so significantly. These are not just mystical spiritual truths. These are what really happen in our lives. And man, if the righteous choose their friends carefully, then the way of the wicked is going to lead them astray. They're going to suffer some harm. These observations are that the people around us so greatly influence us that they start to shape us, they start to sharpen us, they form who we become. And I don't know if you've ever really paid attention to some of the external voices in your life. I don't know if you've noticed what they say to you. Because some of you have voices in your life that belittle you or berate you. Some of you have voices in your life that bring you guilt or shame. Some of you have voices in your life that make you focus on yourself, that draw you away from God's voice. Some of you have voices in your life that just make you feel anxious or fearful. Have you ever stopped to wonder what that's really doing to you? How that's really, really shaping you? For Moses, his voices told him he was a failure. He had a whole community of people, a whole nation of people that were telling him he was wrong, that were telling him that he was worthless, that he was making the wrong decisions, that were telling him he wasn't good enough. Those were Moses' voices. Some of you have similar voices. That's not so different for us today. Some of us have individual voices that say that in our lives. But we all have a cultural voice, too. We all live in a culture. We all live in a community and in a nation and in a time and space in the world and history. We have a culture that speaks to us as well. And that grumbling that Moses is experiencing, that sort of, hey, this isn't enough. Moses, you're not good enough. This isn't enough. That's not just relegated to an ancient story. That's true for us today. In his book, Fat, Broke, and Busy, Jeff Gaines and Jim Sorensen have this to say. This is the quote they say. "No society in human history has experienced the abundance of cheap, unhealthy food, easy access to credit, pressures to spend and accumulate, and the never-ending list of entertainments and distractions that are available to us. Living with this unprecedented amount of temptation has created the never enough mindset, where the antidote to discontent and unhappiness seems to be more." The antidote to discontent and unhappiness for us seems to be more. More spending, more eating, more scheduling. As a nation, we can't seem to get enough. We think that those sorts of things that these voices are telling us are gonna give us life. They're gonna lead us somewhere that'll take us away from unhappiness. Have you ever paid attention to those voices? What's your social media telling you? What's that 24-hour news cycle telling you? What is the culture around you telling you about yourself, and how is it shaping you? They may be telling you you're not enough. The voices around us really, really matter. Right? God knows that. Moses is dealing with this choice, and we have that choice too. We have this choice. We are people who follow. We will listen to voices, and they will shape us. But if we're not careful, they're going to take us down paths we don't want to go. Since we're talking about sheep and shepherds, let's talk about Psalm 23. Really famous psalm. Talks a lot about sheep and shepherds. Talks a lot about this imagery of what it's like to have God for a shepherd, right? The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Again, very poetic imagery. It's amazing, isn't it? Lush green fields, quiet babbling brooks, laying on the beach in Cancun. I don't know, like it feels really great. It feels really amazing, like, oh, this is a very peaceful experience. But let's take it a little deeper. Let's talk about paths of righteousness for a minute. Because when we think about paths of righteousness, I think we think differently than the Bible tells us. Now, the Hebrew word for righteousness is also the same word for straight. So you can read this verse out of Psalm 23 and say, you know, he leads me on straight paths. He leads me on paths that are straight. And I don't know about you, but when I think straight paths, I think about the quickest way from A to B. Right? I think about, well, a straight path is going to get me the fastest from here to there. And so I think of these images, right? These are called desire lines. They actually have a name. It's a naturally occurring like design that happens in our human world. It happens when there is a desire to get from A to B faster than what the marked out path gives you. So you see these on college campuses, by sidewalks. You'll see them in the snow sometimes. When I think about God leads me on straight paths, I think about this. Honestly, I think about the shortcuts, right? Because that's the shortcut. We think, what's the fastest way from A to B? That's the image we usually think about. And that makes a lot of sense to us, especially when we find ourselves in deserts, in hard places that feel exposed and raw. We are looking for the shortest path from where I am here out of the desert. But that is not what straight paths look like to an actual shepherd. To an actual shepherd, there's a different image that comes out, right? This is an image of straight paths to an actual shepherd who leads actual sheep. Because remember, shepherds are out in the wilderness. They're out in the desert. They are hunting for food, and often it's through rocky and dangerous terrain, and it's not easy to find it. So they are often leading their sheep over mountainsides and hillsides that honestly create a lot of danger for them if they were to fall off. So the way in which a shepherd leads his sheep is back and forth, these zigzags, up a mountain, down a mountain. For shepherds in the Middle East and in ancient Middle East, they literally call these striations, these stripes, they call them paths of righteousness. They call them straight paths. These zigzag paths. When we think about straight lines, we think about A to B. When they think about straight lines, they think, what's the safest way to get my sheep to where they need to be? These long back and forth paths, which tells you that the straightest path is the one directly behind the shepherd. He's the one that's leading them there. And if a sheep were to fall off, to take their own route, they're going to fall off the side. It becomes dangerous. My friend Tanner, who's our lead pastor over at our Granville campus at Harbor Life Church, told me about a time where he was mountain climbing in Colorado. He had just graduated high school. He and his friends went out to walk up and down some mountains, and he tells this story about how they were taking these switchbacks, these back and forths, kind of down the mountain. And Tanner got really sick of that progress. So he said, I'm going to find a different path. And so he kind of took off down the mountain, and everybody followed him. So they came to the edge of a 25-foot sheer cliff where they almost fell off of. And they found themselves stuck, unable to find their way back to the car. So they found a new path that was kind of straight down the mountain and ended up on the completely other side of the mountain and had to spend most of the next day hiking around the base of it to get back to their car. And not too long ago, he said, I had a friend who we were talking about this experience, who's on this experience with me, and he says, this guy has since been back, and he's climbed all these 14,000-foot peaks in Colorado, and has done a lot of mountain climbing. And he says to him, I will never, ever leave the path now, because you almost got us killed the day I followed you, right? When we listen to the voice of the shepherd, we learn that the quickest way from A to B is not necessarily a straight line, right? We learn that we have this tendency to drive our way down it and to find ourselves in trouble. We often find ourselves so far off the path. So when we're in the middle of these desert places, hearing the voice of that shepherd is really, really important, because he's got a path where he wants to take you. You've got an idea over here, and the people around you have a better idea. If we could just go back to Egypt, it'll be great. If we could just get off of this path and get on the one over here, you're not good enough to be on that one. You need to come over here on this one. You need to live like this. If we are sheep, then when we find ourselves in the desert and we are prone to follow someone else's voice, we need to ask the question, what is the most influential voice in our lives? Okay, one more piece of scripture, and then we'll move on, then we'll be done. And this is Jesus, right? Jesus, now, he has some things to say about this shepherd in John 10. He says, "Very truly, I tell you, Pharisees, anyone who does not enter the sheep pen by the gate, but climbs in by some other way, is a thief and a robber. The one who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep listen to his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all of his own, he goes on ahead of him, and his sheep follow him because they know his voice. But they will never follow a stranger. In fact, they will run away from him because they do not recognize the stranger's voice." So Jesus has some things to say about listening to the voice of the shepherd. And the funny thing is, again, this isn't just imagery. This is something that really, really matters. In fact, here, let me show you this video, this great video of shepherd. Sorry for the cheesy music. I don't know what I can do about that. But.
One more time.
This guy's actually trying to call these sheep, and they're clearly ignoring him. I think that translates to, "Hey, sheepy, sheepy, sheep." Not sure. Farmer and a stranger, right? When Jesus talks about sheep, I think sometimes we look at that and we think, oh man, that's not a really great thing to be called, right? That's not that's not an encouragement, right? But I think when Jesus talks about sheep, I think he has something really important to say about who we are. We are not only people who are prone to follow, we have an innate and an amazing ability to understand and recognize the voice of God. We have it so deep down in us that we can respond to God. We have a way of responding to God. We can tell the difference between God's voice and the voice of other people. We don't have to let other voices lead us off the path. We don't have to let other voices shape us and tell us we're not good enough. We have an incredible ability to recognize the voice of the shepherd. And what does that voice say? John 10, that voice says, "I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. But I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me and I know the Father, and I will lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen, and I must bring them in also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd." The other voice tells you that you are not enough, but the voice of the shepherd tells you, you are so worthwhile to me that I will lay down my life for you. And somewhere inside of you is the ability to hear that voice. When you are in the middle of a desert, when you are in the middle of a confusing time, a raw time, an exposed time, we are sheep. And so we have the ability to hear the voice of the one who loves us so much that he would lay down his life for us. Because he's not going to lead you on the quickest path, the one that you might take, but I promise you that he cares so much for you that he's going to lead you on the path that brings you the most life. So here's just what I want to ask you to do this week. I want to ask you to consider and to think about, what are the loudest voices in your life right now? And write them down. What are the loudest voices in my life? Is it cultural? Is it individual? Who and what are the loudest voices in your life? And what are they saying? Most of us move through life and we don't pay attention to that. But what is the loudest voice and what are they saying to you? And then second, I would encourage you to read the Gospel of John. Read the story of Jesus Christ and learn to hear what the voice of the shepherd is actually saying to you. What's he saying? What does he want to tell you? If we're going to find our way through the desert, then we need to recognize that we are sheep and that we have a tendency to follow and hear these external voices that take us somewhere that we don't want to go. But we also need to recognize that we are sheep. And we, more than anyone else, have the unbelievable ability to hear the voice of God, the voice of the one who loves us enough to lay his life down. Let's pray. God, thank you for this image that you have spoken to us about who we are and who you are. God, I pray that today we may hear your voice. We may hear the voice of the shepherd, and we may hear what it truly says to us. God, would you lead us in paths of righteousness instead of our own path? Would you lead us in straight paths where we're so close behind you that all we can do is follow? Would you give us a new voice in our life and help us to quiet the external voices that become so loud? In your son's name we pray, amen.